podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Rolling for JJ Williams into the 25. Williams kicks it on. This could be a try. Williams has scored. That little chip through by Gareth Edwards really caught the Springbok defence by surprise. Williams got his boot as he chipped ahead, kicked it through. The bounce went his way and JJ Williams has put the line.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast, a return to winning ways for Wales, just in time for Wayne Pivac, exactly what he needed. How much, though, can we read into the victory over Georgia? What will it mean for the selection against England next week? And we have got stacks and stacks and stacks of listeners' questions to get through. Dan Killick hasn't bothered reading any of them. He's been too busy combing his Callum Sheedy haircut. So he's going to be coming in blind. But we're going to get stuck into these very, very shortly. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, very good. I'll have to send a little photo, I think, of this haircut. Ian Alexander will have to comment on it.
Yeah, it always causes a stir whenever you rock out your new haircut or some new threads. So I'm sure everyone will be looking forward to that. We've got absolutely stacks of questions in, which is fantastic because obviously it means we don't have to do as much preparation. So thanks for that. We're going to start with this one from Jamie Phillips. Thoughts on Wayne Pivac asking Dean Ryan to swap around Moriarty and Wainwright's positions. Also, is Wainwright's long-term test future at 8? Thoughts on that, Daniel?
Well, firstly, I thought Wainwright was absolutely outstanding. I thought he had a brilliant, brilliant game at 8. Loads of clever little steps, really aggressive carrying. He was really up for it, wasn't he? I think it was a really clever performance from him. Even when he didn't make huge yards, he just took a bit of a sting out of them. And I think he looks like a decent operator at 8. I think he's struggled this campaign at 6, hasn't he? He hasn't looked at his best then. But yesterday, I know they're not the greatest of opposition, so we do have to be a little bit mindful of that and getting carried away. But he looked good, and I have thought that he could be a good option at 8. And we need somebody at 8, don't we? It's what we need desperately.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we certainly need options there. It's not been helped, the fact that, I suppose, been pinning a lot of hopes on Toby, and it's not really clicked for him this autumn. It's been probably his most subdued set of appearances in a Wales shirt. I thought Wainwright, his performance was almost Toby-esque, actually. It was, like you say, really good footwork to help you gain a yard. It was clever carrying. It wasn't destructive kind of Billy Vunipola stuff. It was making those yards when you need to, using your feet to free up a little bit of room and make those extra couple of meters. So I was impressed with what he did. There was the odd spill in there. So I don't think it was a flawless performance, but
it was very wet, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was horrendous conditions.
Yeah, it was very wet. I like the fact that, because the games are getting so tight, aren't they? And it's going to be very, very tight, tight against the way in which England defend. I was just kept thinking of him against England, and he stepped out of things, span out of things quite nicely. And just looking at his foot, if you concentrate on the top part of his body, it doesn't look like there's too much going on. But if you just step down, scan down a little bit and just see his feet, there's a lot going on, isn't there? Little jinx with his eyes, his hips. He's a thinking player, isn't he? And I think that he's a Pivac style player then, isn't he?
I guess so.
I always
think that Pivac style players, particularly in the forwards, are turnovers and offloads. And I don't think he's tidy in those regards. But I think his best play is the donkey work, really. And you're right, he's very clever in the way that he does it. It's through footwork, it's through clever carries, it's through actually things like defending, driving lineouts. He did really well during the World Cup. So yeah. I think that it's those things I think he does very well. And let's be honest, they're things that the side desperately need at the moment. So
I also think
he went well at 8.
Jed, that he can... he can attack nicely as well in the, you know, Pivac wants the forwards in the wider channels, doesn't he?
Oh, he's a real athlete.
That he does. He's got some real pace. He cuts some really nice lines as well, doesn't he? So he does seem to have it all. Obviously, we haven't been talking about him of late, but I was hoping there was going to be a performance in him at some point, and it really came yesterday. And I do think that he could be, you know, he could be a real option there at eight. Also, you know, he's an option at six, isn't he? When he's fully up for it. But just if he's got a bit more time as well in the wider channels, he does cut very nice lines. So I think from an attacking perspective, which at the moment we are struggling again with, he could unlock a few defences there for us, because we're going to be needing that also.
It's interesting. I'm never too sure. We're going to talk a lot about the back row, because many of the questions that have come in are related to it. I'm never too sure whether it matters that much what number is on your back, as long as the overall balance is there. And I just feel like perhaps in the previous games, we weren't utilising his ball carrying. And, you know, we haven't been able to get him into the game as much. Maybe that does help at eight, because, you know, because you're packing down there, and the scrum went well yesterday as well, which I'm sure we'll come on to talk about. So I don't know. I still think his best position is six, but I think he's comfortable at doing a job at either of them, as long as the balance in the rest of the pack is there too. So yeah, we're going to explore that a little bit further. And we got this one in from our good mate Craig Muncy. If Tipperick is out and Navidi has done no contact work, is it too much to expect for him to start at open side, even if he trains fully this week? If so, who starts at seven? Botham, Wainwright, or a call-up for Ollie Griffiths? Let's start by breaking that down. I'm working on the basis that Tipperick is going to be out, because that was a big collision. And I think
What did you make of that, actually, Jeff?
To be honest, mate, I didn't see it as a cheap shot. I think it looks really bad when slowed down. But it was a very bad, you know, it was a very bad outcome. So I think you have to err on the side of, you know, on the side of the attacking player there and his welfare, which obviously is Tipperick in this scenario. But I don't know. To me, it just looked like he was going down and the fella's trying to make the tackle. And it does look like a swingy arm, because you're going in to make the tackle. I don't think it was meant to be a swinging arm at the head. I might be wrong. What did you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. It does look, it's like anything, isn't it? When you slow it down, it looks really nasty and deliberate. Mm-hmm. But he was coming from a backwards position, wasn't he? Coming like, yeah, reaching around. It always is going to look like a punch. One of those ones you'll never actually know. But I do think he was just trying to stop. He was trying to stop the momentum and was, you know, coming in with a bit of a swinging arm with everything he had. But his body was falling, and it just didn't look great.
No.
I didn't think it was a punch.
No,
really.
I think
it was a bit unfortunate, really.
It is, but I think realistically, you know, we're just getting to the position now where any contact to the head is going to be a possible red card. And in that scenario, you know, if Tipperick hadn't been falling and he'd made the tackle on the chest, yeah, you get away with it. But I think you now know that if you go high, there is a risk, even if there is absolutely no intention, there's a risk you could get sent off. So I think that's starting to seep through to players now. And I think you've just got to work on that basis, regardless of how unlucky some of them can be. But likewise, Sam Warburton was adamant in the commentary box that it was a cheap shot. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how. He was quite quick with that comment, wasn't he? But I just think it was a bit unfortunate, really.
Okay, well, let's get to the seven business then. So would you be risking Josh Navidi?
I would. We've risked him before, haven't we? He's come back, mate, into games.
He hasn't played for 3 months. You can't throw him in against England. Like, there is nothing riding on this game. I think it's way too risky.
Even though it's Josh Navidi?
Oh, he's a wonderful player. You know that. And he's brilliant. But, you know, let's say he goes out and has an amazing performance and we beat England by some miracle. You know, we're still going to finish second or third in this largely meaningless game, in this meaningless cup. So I don't know.
But it's Wales.
Look after Navidi. You've got to look after him.
this is a big game though, isn't it, mentality wise? If we can beat England, no one's expecting us to beat England. And usually I would say, yeah, it's crazy to even talk about putting a player in that hasn't played for 3 months. Mm. But because it's Navidi, I find myself anyway thinking the guy's almost superhuman. He is the one person that you could put in. In the past, we've talked about Faletau being in that same, the same sort of, that's not caliber, but you know, whatever the word is. And I don't know, I am tempted, yes, to throw him in all honesty.
See, I think again, the whole Ollie Griffiths thing, I think he would be the perfect solution to bring in at seven. You're going to need an explosive player who can turn ball over. Obviously, we know Navidi can do all of these things as well. He can carry, he can turn ball over, super aggressive. Griffiths is playing with a real intensity. Admittedly, he hasn't played the last couple of weeks because of the whole COVID thing. So I don't know whether the COVID thing will rule it out, or they've been through enough period quarantining that he'll be allowed to, he might get a call up into the camp. If so, that is the answer for me. I'd have him straight in. And, you know, God, Pivac's brought players in from every other position to come straight into the lineup. We have got a crisis at seven at the moment, I think.
Yeah, we need an out-and-out seven, don't we?
Yeah, and although he's been playing a lot of rugby at eight, we need an out-and-out fetcher in there. Griffiths, for me, is the right solution. And
so you're going no Navidi then? You wouldn't pick him, but Ollie Griffiths.
I don't think he should have been in the squad. He just doesn't look. You know, he hasn't played a game of rugby for 3 months. You can't chuck him in there. I think it's, you know, if this was a World Cup quarter final, yeah, you might be tempted to do it. But you know, it's a nothing game. I know it's against England, but in the grand scheme of things, I would much rather that Josh. You know, if he plays and gets injured again, then you know, because he's been rushed back. God, you know, what crime that would be. I think, you know, I know players can get injured in training. They could get injured in any game. But I just think rushing him back, having had no games whatsoever. If he'd had 20 minutes off the bench against Georgia, or he'd had a couple of bench appearances to get him back up to speed, then I think it's a different scenario. But right now, coming in cold against this England pack is too much to ask, even for Navidi. And I just think he's, particularly where he's had a lot of head knocks, take your time, make sure that he's absolutely ready to come back and play rugby, because the Six Nations is way more important.
So you're starting Griffiths at seven?
I would start Griffiths. I'm just scanning through the questions as well, because I think we have, in fact, yeah, the next one is from Morgan Ball, who says, is the back row balance correct? Are they being used correctly? Didn't think both of them being instructed to play in the wide channels really worked yesterday. And if everyone is fit, what is Wales' best back row? So there's a couple of great questions in there. I'm not sure the balance is correct, because I think we've been chopping and changing a lot. And so, yeah. I think it's different if everyone is fit, because if everyone's fit and fully, you know, and the best of
their
form.
Well, I'm playing well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, with Toby not playing well, the balance does seem to be out, doesn't it? I think if he's on form, it's a totally different position we're in that back row.
Yeah.
I think Shane Lewis-Hughes has played very well, but he's a very, you know, combative player, isn't he? And we've lacked that physicality. So he's come in, played well, but you know, is he the answer in the back row? Is he the one that makes a gel? I actually think, you know, he doesn't, but he's a very, very good six and a really good option, and will be involved in many Welsh sides. But I think because we've been so poor in a lot of areas, we haven't quite got it right in that back row for me.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's so many players fit that, you know, we haven't seen Ellis Jenkins play for 2 years. If he comes back and is the player that we remember, I think he might even oust Tipperick in that scenario. Or he's certainly in the mix, you know, if you're playing him alongside Tipperick. I think Ellis Jenkins, if he's fully fit. But the problem you've got, you know, you could end up with Tipperick, Ellis Jenkins and Josh Navidi, realistically, in that 6-7-8. And that's an incredible back row where you've got an amazing set of skills. But I don't know, I don't think we can dwell on everyone being fit and everyone being fully formed, because we're just not in that.
We've almost got three full different back row combinations we could go with, haven't we, depending on who we're playing against. But so much of it comes back to that eight. It's such a key position, isn't it, the eight? And a lot of the time we talk about seven, we talk about six, but eight is so, just so crucial. It's a massively important place to be, you know, one of the most hardest places to play. And I think we've really lacked Toby being on form.
Yeah. Well, we're going to return to talking about the back row later on in the show, because Dan Killick is going to be picking his side, and I haven't really thought about mine, Dan. I'm kind of more tempted to see you in the head selector role, so you can pick your whole thing, and I might chip in a little bit as we go along, but we're going to do that towards the end of the show. But in the meantime, we've got stacks more questions to get through. This one is from Gary Mason. Wins against England come from a huge physical performance. Do these players have what it takes to stay with England in that battle? Considering the selection, did any of the backs do enough? A couple of questions in there. Let's tackle the physicality point. Is this set of players, have they got what it takes to take England on physically?
You'd say at the moment, no, but yes, we have. We know we can match any side physically when we're really up for it and on our game. So it's, you know, can the coaches get the boys really, really up for it? And can the players themselves get themselves up for it as well? Because they've got to take a bit of this on as well. In terms of the backs, I thought Johnny Williams, I thought he had a great game at 12. I've liked him for the Scarlets. I liked him, you know, playing in England. You know, they rate him over there, didn't they, with him getting that call up against the Barbars in that own cap game. I thought he was strong. He gave us direction again. And I'll be probably mentioned this a few times. It is against Georgia, so it is different.
Oh, we have to consider that. I know that, I think there are certain things you can take out of it. Scrummaging is always, you know, is always something that you can benchmark against a Georgian pack. Things like how you defend them all and how you get your driving more going, I think they're pretty good barometers. The rest of it, I thought they were pretty poor, to be honest, Georgia, with the exception of Gorgadze at eight, who is just, is living up to his almost namesake, Gorgodza, who, you know, was a colossal eight and had a very similar name. I think this fella is something special. But the rest of the side, I thought, were pretty poor, actually. So I think we do have to take it with a pinch of salt. But yeah, I agree on Johnny Williams. I thought he did well, and I think he'd be very, very fired up for a game against England.
Yeah, I do. I think he'd be well. He's a really good option to have against England because he knows he's played in England, you know, for a good number of years. Knows a lot of those players. Has played with a number of those players as well. So I'd be having a real good look at him at 12. I've got a few things on the 10, which we'll probably talk about later. And I thought Zamit as well had a good enough game to keep his keep his seat there.
Excellent. Right, let's move on to this. This is from Ian Alexander. Yesterday felt like that should have been the first choice front row. So why has it taken so long to get them on the pitch? And was 60 minutes plus too long for them, considering it's England next week? Again, a couple of good questions in there.
Yeah, really good questions. I have no idea why we didn't start with that front row for the first few games, because yeah, that is, and I think most people knew that was the strongest scrummage in front row, and you know, I include Elliot D in there as well in terms of, you know, being a scrummaging hooker. He's a very, very good hooker, isn't he, in the tight. So it is perplexing. I think the Georgians as well, their scrummaging is not as good as people make out. I think it's been poor for a couple of years, really. And I would say that Ireland definitely have a better scrummaging side. I'd actually say that Scotland are a better scrummaging side at the moment as well. And so there aren't many sides that aren't. So it's strange, isn't it, that we kept the front row, the strongest front row back for this game.
I think the whole thing for this is because he's just got his selection wrong, and he's wanted to play Carey because he's an X Factor player. We haven't been able to. And again, look, this is not the end of Rhys Carey's international career. The guy has got serious potential and serious ability, and the scrummaging always takes time. But I don't think that Pivac was anticipating it. He was going to find it this difficult. I think it would have helped if he'd started a lot more club rugby. You know, he's not really played that much club rugby with a one on his back, which I'd have liked to have seen a lot more of. And so I think that's been a difficulty. So he's got that, you know, he's got that call wrong. I think he's got the Elias call wrong. I'm just not sure he's international class for, you know, starting games against Ireland and the like. And yeah, you know, okay, Francis, fine. That's kind of, you know, whether you go Francis or Lee, I don't think there's too much in it, to be honest. But Samson Lee played very well. So I think, yeah, it's as simple as that. You know, he got his selection wrong because he didn't think that we would go that badly in the scrum. And sadly, in those games against Scotland and certainly against Ireland, we have done.
Yeah, we did. So I thought Wyn Jones and Samson did a fair bit around the park as well.
We were
very comfortable in the scrum, weren't we? And your D in there as well. It looked like a really nice, tight unit. I know that we lost a couple of lineouts as well, but we looked a lot more comfortable. Mm. I think you mentioned it as well, didn't you, that with the throwing in from Elias, you were nervous before the lineout was actually set up. It just didn't quite feel right, and it often led to something going wrong. So I don't know whether he definitely needs to work on that. But yeah, a lot better scrummaging performance. But I don't think we can take too much away from it, really.
No, but I also think that the whatever it was, the 20 minutes or actually the 40 minutes in Wyn Jones's case when they came off the bench against Ireland, I think there's a lot to be taken from that. It looked a lot better when Wyn Jones was on the pitch. And I think that, yeah, I think this is a good scrummaging lineup, and I think it has to start. And obviously we'll debate that at the end of the show.
On the timing, Jed, from Ian's question, do they potentially stay on for, it's a good point, 60 minutes. I think, you know, I think they'll just about probably be all right. It's a relatively quick turnaround, wasn't it? And they probably did have a good old workout there. But hopefully they will be all the better for it because they needed that. You know, maybe the coaches thought they needed that time together because they haven't had the time, have they? Mm-hmm. Playing together in that front row setup. So, but interesting when the boys came on as well, didn't they? Leon Brown got a good shove on, didn't he? And won a penalty there. So I was delighted for him. And a load of the players came round and gave him a good few pats on the back. So that was great to see because he's had a tough old time there at times, isn't he? But he seems to be getting stronger there. So yeah, good.
Yeah. And look, you know, these are times when you need props who can do different things. You're always going to need scrummagers, but that is the area of the game that comes last. You know, that is the area of the game where you have to mature. You have to have tough days at the office. And I still think in the long run, if both Carey and Brown can improve on those areas of the game, you could have an incredible front row if Carey and Brown kind of go on and achieve their potential. And I'm certainly not writing either of them out, even though they're still finding their feet at international level from a scrummaging perspective. So, yeah, some interesting options there.
Yeah, we've got on that, because we've got those two are excellent runners with the ball, aren't they? They're really dynamic. So we've got, we've got three different sets in the props then as well, haven't we? Because we've also got then, you know, your Nicky Smiths that are more sort of turnover, you know, sort of,
yeah, Dylan Lewis,
turnover merchants, and Dylan Lewis as well. So we've got three different sets there. Obviously, that's not talking about, you know, Rob Evans then as a ball playing a ball playing prop. So we have got quite a few sort of combinations, haven't we, to go with. We just got to make sure we get the combinations as right as we can, really.
Yeah, absolutely. We had this one in from Yanto Jones as well. It'd be a tough debut for sure, but now is surely the time to give Ollie Griffiths a chance. And then he's caveated that and said, I know it's not actually his debut, but you're right. Kind of 4 minutes against Tonga in 2017 didn't really count. We're going to come back and discuss that at the end of the show. And let's just take this one before we go for a quick breakdown. And it's a slightly tongue-in-cheek one. It's from Patrick. Was not being able to watch yesterday's game, a small mercy. What was your take on it? Did you enjoy it? Did we learn a lot? How entertaining was it?
It wasn't a fantastic game of rugby, was it? But I did still enjoy the game. I I liked seeing, you know, I really enjoyed watching, you know, Callum Sheedy at 10, just seeing how he went. Zamit as well, I really liked watching him play. I think, you know, we touched on it, but Wainwright at 8 was just a joy to watch. Front row going well as well. It was, for me, I enjoyed it because we'd been playing so poorly, and yes, we weren't fantastic, but, you know, we mentioned it on last week's pod that under Gatland, there was a lot of performances that were, I suppose,
they were a lot worse than that, actually. They were a lot worse against the tier two sides.
There were, yeah. And there was narrow losses. You know, we nailed them, didn't we? We won comfortably without being spectacular. I can't say that's a sign of a good side, but you know, generally speaking, it is. But it was a comfortable win, wasn't it? We left a good few tries out on the park as well. Obviously, it would have been nice to have seen a bit more rugby being played. But I thought all in all, with the amount of changes we made and, you know, new combinations in key parts of the in the team, really, I thought we did very, very well, and hats off to the coaches, to be fair, because we've been pretty critical. So, got to give them a pat on the back, really.
Fair enough. Right, still got absolutely loads to get through in the second half of the show. We'll be dominated by more listeners' questions, and then we will get Dan Killick's take on who should play next week against England. And, of course, we'll be previewing that and seeing if there is any chance of a Wales victory. So who knows, maybe we'll finish the show with a bit of cheer. You never know. But first, we're going to take this very quick break. Right, Dan, let's get another listener's question on the go. This one is from Lost in Yorkshire. It says, do you think Sheedy should replace Bigger? Sheedy is in far better form and, in my opinion, fits Wayne Pivak's game plan. By the way, the weather looks far better for next Saturday and could get decent weather in Llanelli for once. Well, that would be nice.
That's an early call.
That's the biggest call of all, I think, predicting good weather in Llanelli in November. Let's get your take on the halfbacks. You said you're impressed with Callum Sheedy. What impressed you in particular?
I just thought he was, you know, it was his first start, wasn't it? And he must have been nervous. It was a new back line then for him to work with. He would have been feeling the pressure that everyone was, generally speaking, expecting a Welsh win. But, you know, by God, the pressure was on. So I thought he handled it. He thought he handled it well. The conditions were awful. Never a nice night to play at 10, is it, when it's bucketing down? And I just thought he looked...
I wouldn't know, mate. I wouldn't know.
Well, just a couple of games for me. but he looked comfortable, and I thought he handled it well. He wasn't spectacular, but you know, he made a couple of errors, but he had some nice touches as well. It was kind of the performance that I expected, and I thought that he was pretty assured there in a game which was quite messy, quite scrappy, an arm wrestle at times. He did well.
Yeah, it's interesting. It reminds me a little bit of, obviously we've said this a number of times, that the whole situation reminds me of 2007. It does remind me a little bit of, do you remember the clambering for James Hook over Stephen Jones? And, you know, Hook was the up-and-coming trendy option at the time. And Stephen Jones, I guess, was bearing a little bit of the brunt of the fact that Wales hadn't been playing particularly well. He might even have been captain as well at the time. And yeah, Hook came in, man of the match performance against England, which is great, you know, and obviously went on to play for Wales a number of times. But likewise, that wasn't the end of Stephen Jones's career. It was, you know, he went on to play in two more World Cups. I think it's one of these where Sheedy, I thought, did a very good job, professional performance. There's an argument for him starting next week for sure. And I think that is based on form, I would say. And it's a good opportunity to see how he goes in one of these fixtures. So, but I certainly, at the same time, I'm not entirely sure I'm bought into this Bigger can't play the inverted commas Wayne Pivac way. I think that I think he has got a lot more, and Gatland wanted him to play in a very particular way, which I guess is Bigger's natural game, the kick chase and stuff like that. But all I'm saying is I wouldn't be writing Dan Bigger off just because Callum Sheedy had a good start against Georgia.
Yeah, Sheedy had some front football, didn't he? And Bigger, I'm sure Bigger would have loved to have played in that game and showed what he could do. But he wasn't involved, was he? So yeah, I thought Sheedy went well, but yeah, Bigger would have enjoyed playing at 10, I think, in that game for definite. I thought Kieran Hardy had a decent game.
Yeah, I want to stick with this one, actually, because I had this question in from Rob Thomas, who tweets us quite a lot. Hardy and Sheedy did enough yesterday to stick with on the long term. If we're serious about 2023, shouldn't they be the first choice from now on? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that Hardy had a solid game, really. I think it would have been quite easy for him to maybe have try to overdo things yesterday and, gone on a number of runs, a number of snipes. And, first and foremost, his job is to get the ball out, isn't it? Mm-hmm. To release the backs. And I thought he got it just right. He did have a couple of goes, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. They were nice, a few nice little touches in there and a few snipes around the fringes.
Yeah. I think he would have come off and felt sort of quietly confident about himself, really, and some decent kicks there as well in poor conditions. So yeah, there was a couple of mistakes, but there was a couple of mistakes from almost everyone on the park. So yeah, I thought he did well. Whether or not we go with Kieran Hardy and Sheedy moving forward, I don't know. I mean, I do think at the moment that we don't know who our best nine is, because there's nobody in real form for me. You'll probably have something else to say on that, but he played well, Kieran Hardy. I mean, if he did get the nudge against England, I'd be very, very pleased for him. I don't think it'll happen, but he certainly didn't have a poor game. So I think there's plenty more to come from him. But at the moment, none of the nines, I think, are really, really standing out and saying, "That's my shirt, come and get it."
Yeah, I mean, just quickly on this one. Yeah, I thought Kieran Hardy did well too. But again, I just think we're reading way too much into this game. It's, it was a much needed win. Could have been a potential banana skin, but it was dog rough conditions and they navigated that well. That's about it for me. I don't think you can read that much into it. I haven't seen enough from Kieran Hardy to say that, oh, we're going to pin all our hopes on him. I think he's one of a number of nines who are in the mix at the moment. Like we said, I'm a massive fan of Reece Webb. I think I'm starting to come around to your way of thinking that there's something not quite there and he still hasn't reached that match fitness yet. And, I think Gareth Davis is an excellent nine who's not playing very well at the moment. Kieran Hardy's on the up, but has yet to be tested at the highest level. And, he's not even the first choice at the Scarlet. So I don't know how you could make him first choice at Wales. I just can't buy into that yet. Pivac was, Pivac didn't trust him enough to pick him in any of the other games. He brought Lloyd Williams in for that. So I can't be having that Kieran Hardy is nailed on starting nine for the next 3 years. Absolutely not. And just to build on this, another one from Robert Giannotti. Each of the scrum halves have had game time now without a clear first choice. How would you currently rank them and where would Thomas Williams fit into that ranking? So I'm keen to get your thoughts on this, Dan.
Yeah. So for me at the moment, I would say it's whether we go really tactically, picking the nines, depending on who we're playing against, or whether we just stick with like building towards a combination. Like I do think that a good option against England would be Lloyd Williams because of the threat that comes from their pack. It's just a massive, massive pack, isn't it? That just always comes down the inside channels, smashing people.
Yeah. If you think you're going to be able to play a structured box kicking game with Maro Itoje around the fringes next week, you can forget it. because he is, you know, I mean, he's a phenomenal player and he's in phenomenal form. And he's an absolute animal at that area amongst a number of other areas. So, you know, to think we're going to get Caterpillar Rucks on and have this very average box kicking game that we've had so far, I think it would be incredibly naive. So I think there is a case for starting Lloyd next week, because you're right, you just get the ball the hell away from the ruck.
Yeah, just get the ball out. Get the ball out nicely. He's played behind an under, you know, I suppose the pack hasn't a great deal of power over the years. I know they're playing all right at the moment, but I think that Lloyd, there's a good shout for him at the moment, and that's because the other nines aren't really there. I think Gareth is, I'm tempted to pick Gareth at nine.
Really?
I am. I just think for the England game, you usually see him rise, and I know he's off form at the moment, but, and again, I'm hoping that he'd come through and deliver on that. But I, at the moment, I'd probably go with Lloyd against England, which is, yeah, it's a strange place we're in at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, in terms of ranking them, I still think Webb is the best player when he's playing his best. But again, full caveat, as we said with Toby in the first half, we haven't seen that for a little while. And
you know, on Webb, Jen, on the weekend, so I thought he did what we need from him, which is he held the, you know, his pick and goes are great, aren't they? Just fantastic. They don't look like he's running at pace, but he just, you know, he spots something and he's off. And there isn't a nine like that. He does that better than anyone, really. But you know, obviously the box kick in, I'm sure you weren't too pleased with that, but we did get a bit of change from it at times. Yeah. Other times I thought, why are we doing that? Let's see what we can do. You know, we're points on the board, we're up, let's try and get a couple more. But I know the conditions were poor, but he when he does show those little glimpses, you think, right, he's back. But for me, he's just not, I don't know, whether it's fitness, injuries or something, he's carrying something. And I just don't think he's right. He's quite right. But I really hope he was. I suppose I really wish he was, because he's quality, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he will be involved in some regard next week. And I wouldn't necessarily be surprised to see him have 21 on his back again. And I think that might be an option, but we'll see. Yeah, I think Gareth is a bit out of form at the moment. And do you know what I really don't think helps? I thought he was so good for Wales during the World Cup. And when he was asked to do a job for Gatland with that individual spot blitz that pops up out of the line, because he had the freedom to do that because the rest of the defence was so well organised. And obviously that gets completely taken away from his game right now. But I also don't think he's in the best form, and I think I think a lot of these players it would benefit them, because at the moment they're playing bits and pieces for Wales. It would benefit them to have some extended game time for their regions. I'm not necessarily saying release them, because it's difficult to do that at the moment with COVID protocol and stuff, but in an ideal scenario, these players will get a good run of games for their regions ahead of the Six Nations, because then we can start to see. But on that very quickly, I think Thomas Williams had had an encouraging game today for Cardiff. And I'm a massive fan of his, as you know. I think we've yet to see it fully at international level. But in terms of who can improve and go on, you know, we're hoping that Webb can get back to his previous form. But I think Thomas Williams is a lot more unexposed. I think the potential he's got is far and away greater than any of the others. I think he can be if he goes on to achieve his potential, he can be a better nine than Gareth Davis. And that's a really encouraging thing. So again, hopefully he can stay fit, get some good game time in for Cardiff and come back and maybe make that shirt his own come the Six Nations. I think it would be ideal to have a clearer idea of who the best nine is, because as we've just demonstrated in the last 10 minutes, it's a bit of a muddle.
Yeah, so you'd say, I mean, just talking there, then you'd say that Thomas Williams and Kieran Hardy are the future, and two, they both play very differently, don't they? So maybe a nice combo.
I would say I've seen a lot more from Thomas Williams to suggest that he could be a world-class international nine. And I'm not writing off Hardy at all. I just haven't seen it yet. I've seen lots of great, neat and tidy performances. And I've seen a guy who's been prepared to leave his region, go graft in the championship and come back. And I really, really respect that. I think that's done him the world of good. First up, he's got to make that Scarlett shirt his own. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's quietly putting in some really decent performances without them being sort of show-stopping, because he's not that nine, is he, that's going to grab the headlights. But I think he can in a slightly different way. So yeah, I mean, there's plenty of options, aren't there? But it's unclear at the moment who's number one, who's number five.
Yeah, no, it genuinely is. I mean, yeah, the whole Lloyd Williams thing coming in from the cold is very, very interesting. And, you know, I think he's got a legitimate claim to that nine shirt next week. So, yeah, looking forward to talking about that more in a minute. This one is from Ash. Do we target a win against England or try and develop the squad / the playing style?
I think we've got to target a win against them, because we can't talk about playing I think we just got to be so physical, haven't we? We're all nervous about their physicality.
Yeah.
But often though, we've been nervous about their physicality, and then we've matched them up front, haven't we? And we've been really, really up for it. So I think we've got to go out to win, because I just don't want that.
Yeah.
I think it's too risky to have that mental slip on, look, let's just go out and have a good performance, guys. I think it's a little too weak against them.
I don't think you can ever say that against England. And, you know, I know I'm saying with my selection, I wouldn't be picking Navidi because I think it's too risky. And in the grand scheme of things, the game doesn't mean anything. But it is an opportunity to test yourself against arguably the best side in the world, or certainly, you know, certainly one of. And
yeah, they probably are at the moment, aren't they?
And that's it. It's like, you know, no matter what playing style you're trying to develop, if you have any intention of causing any damage at a World Cup or even in the Six Nations, you've got to be able to match the physicality that England are going to bring. So that's the part of the performance I want to see. If we lose by two or three tries, but we've managed to match them and we've made a good game of it, I mean, it pains me to say, but I think I could probably live with that. But it's just, yeah, that's the thing for me. You've got to have a serious fronting up performance and get well and truly stuck in and don't allow them to bully you, because, you know, we allowed Ireland to do that, and Ireland have just went and got absolutely bullied. I don't think I've ever seen a game where the scoreline was that close and the performance was that was so
one-sided.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, really, yeah. That was a losing by 30 points kind of performance from Ireland, and they lost by whatever it was, 12 or 13 points. So it's, I think it's, you know, big warning flags for next week.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that England Ireland game was strange, wasn't it? Because it was so one-sided. Yet, a couple of clever plays, and Ireland got a couple of points on the board. So maybe there's something to look at there.
Right, we're going to take just a couple more then, Dan, before we get your take on next week's game, and just going to take this one from Jason Williams. Do sticking props straight from the academy and at the deep end really work, or would it be wise to send them to earn their trade in the Prem for a season or two and work on their techniques? I think it's a fascinating question, actually, because I think we've said before that the Premiership doesn't really prepare you for regional rugby. However, case in point is Wyn Jones, who, as we've just said, is our best scrummaging loose head, and that's very much where he earned his trade at Llandovery, I think. So it's a really interesting one, and obviously the area of the pitch that you know the most about. So let's hear your opinion on that.
I say I can answer this one with confidence from playing many seasons for Astrid Ronda in the front row. I think there's a bit of a need for both then. Yeah. So I think you're going to learn a lot from coming up against some wily, you know, old heads in the Prem that have been around. You know, you can pick up the dark arts, be turned inside and out. Equally, some of the younger props will come up against props that they'll probably be able to outpower as well, where, you know, maybe the prop they're propping against isn't as you know, as strong and as powerful as them. So it's a little bit of both really. I think it depends on who you're propping against. They'll be known in the Premiership for being great scrummagers in this particular side, and then there'll probably be a number of poor ones as well. So I don't think you can just say, look, they've all got to go back to the Premiership to learn their trade, because a lot of them, you know, maybe won't pick up what we think they may pick up. It's a little bit of both, isn't it? They've got to learn learn how to scrummage, playing for the, you know, playing for the regions as well, equally playing for the, you know, playing for the Premiership sides, and, you know, and on their way up through the ranks as well. I do think there's a lot of players that are spending probably too much time in tracksuits and in, you know, in you know, on the sidelines or in squads and not being involved. But so, in answer to it, I think it's a bit of both. You know, you can't just throw all the guys into the Premiership and hope that they'll suddenly become great scrummages, because not all the scrummaging's of a great standard.
Fair enough. I think that's a pretty decent answer there. Let us just finish with this one, and then we'll get on to your team selection. It's from Jonathan Davis. Best. I'm only going to pick one of his questions. Best second row partnership.
Will he be involved next week, or he's going to key listener? Absolutely. Sorry, what was that? I was just amazed that he's messaged in.
Yeah, best second row partnership.
Best second row partnership. Yeah,
it's not that Jonathan Davis, by the way. It's Jiffy.
Is it? Yeah. If we go left now,
numbers.
Missed that numbers call. I would say, well, for next weekend.
No, I think this is in general.
In general, I think we don't know again. I think it's a little bit like the nine. Yeah. There'd be some people that are talking about Adam Beard. Yeah, Adam Beard's not even in the squad.
Yeah.
Corey Hill's talked about because of his technical ability. You know, isn't he great in the line out? I think he's a decent sort of technical scrummager as well.
Mm-hmm.
Works well with Alan Wynn. Then we've got Jake Ball then for the grunt and, you know, heavy hitting, smashing rucks, carrying. And then Seb Davis, you know, for that sort of athleticism, ball playing second row. I thought had a, you know, a decent enough game, albeit again against the Georgians. So I don't think we really know at the moment, because we haven't had the platform again in the front row. So it comes back from there, doesn't it? I would say
it does. I think that also, though, where we've really struggled, as we've said before, is securing our own ball. And that's something where, you know, second rows can have a massive impact at getting in, hitting rucks and clearing them out. So, and of course the line out. So, yeah, I think the front row definitely had a part to play in it. But, I'm not sure that. I still think there's been an opportunity for people to have staked a claim and make the four shirt their own.
What would you, do you think it's a fair point, though, that it's almost similar to the nines then, that we don't
absolutely
don't quite
do. Know? I absolutely do. I think that's you've hit the nail on the head there. I think it is. I think
we're short, aren't we, as well? We're short on, we'd like a few more options, wouldn't we? I mean, what would we do to have some of the English options? I mean, good grief.
I mean, it's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a complete conveyor belt there. But I think you probably ask, you know, five people on the street, you'd maybe get a different answer from each person, maybe. So that's the state we're in at the moment.
Yeah, I still think that Corey Hill and Alan Wynn Jones are best second row partnership. I think in terms of that, you know, who the best players are and who are proven at the top level, I think, you know, there are some options in there. I thought Jake Ball went very well, but again, it's against Georgia. You know, is there more improvement to come from Jake Ball to say that that's going to provide us the platform and the ability to take on the likes of England? I don't know. I'm not sure on that. You know,
you prefer Jake Ball off the bench as well, Jed, don't you?
I'm not sure he'd be in my 23. I know, everyone, you know, everyone out West is saying that he should be starting and stuff like that. But I'm not overly, you know, he was great against Georgia, but is that his level now? I don't know. I just think that when there are sides out there with second rows, like, you know, like Itoje and Ritalik and the likes in the world, I don't know. I think we've probably got to look for a bit more, but at the same time, look, hands up, we're missing grunt and go forward. And he gave us that against Georgia.
He sure did. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. You're right, though. It's more questions than answers. So, yeah, that's the story as it goes. Let's get your team, Dan. This is what everyone's been clinging on for. They don't want to hear me waffle. They want to hear you pick your side. So let's have it. Let's start with the number one jersey.
So, Wyn Jones at one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going Elliot D at two. Samson Lee at three.
Yeah, I like the look of that. I don't think there can be any arguments around that, really.
Yeah, I thought Samson had a really, really good game. It was just such a strong scrummager. I know Wyn Jones as well, but he's such a strong scrummager when he's fit. Mm. It's just, he's a proper unit, isn't he? All you got to do is look at his face and you're like, yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy I don't want to go up against. So I like that front row. Alan Wyn Jones, and I'm going Jake Ball for me against England.
Okay.
Yeah. So back row. Now, I'm going Wainwright at eight.
Mm-hmm. Big call.
Yeah, big call that. But I just thought he went so well, and I've seen enough of him over the last 2 years to know there's a lot that can come from him. And he's a thinking eight. With Faletau being off the ball as well, I think we need his physicality at the moment, which isn't coming from Faletau, sadly. So on the basis that Tipperick's out, because I think that's a cert, isn't it? I would go with Navidi at seven.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, yep.
And then at six, I'm going to go with Shane Lewis-Hughes.
Okay.
Because it's against England, he'll be absolutely raring to go. Nine, Lloyd Williams.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you would have said, I could have asked you to name your team at any point from the last 4 years of us doing the show, and Lloyd Williams would have been your honest choice at nine.
I've said why I think he should be there against England.
Yeah, I agree.
Sheedy at 10.
Yeah.
I'm going Sheedy at 10.
I can see the logic with that. What is it, though? Yeah. Is it his style of play, or is it his form? What are you thinking?
Yes, it's form. He plays in England. I know Bigger does as well, but I don't think he'll be... I think he really looked forward to this opportunity. I thought he played well last week, and he did probably enough to keep his shirt. Because I think you've got to have a look as well that I know the opposition is Georgia, but surely the coaches have to say to them, look, go out, give us your best performance, and if you play well enough, you'll hold on to the shirt. There has to be something in that, doesn't there? It doesn't matter about the opposition, you know, overly. You have to have that. Otherwise, you know, the boys going out, there's no point in going out, you know, upon kickoff, really. So I'm going to go with Sheedy. I think he'd relish the opportunity. And I really like the look on paper then of having Bigger on the bench. It worked really well with Anscombe. And I think if it doesn't quite go right, on he comes, steadies the ship. Brings a great kicking game on, and we've got to remember it worked beautifully with Anscombe, didn't it?
Yeah, as you know, I was a big fan of bringing Bigger off the bench. I thought that when Anscombe was playing, you know, kind of made that 10 shirt his own, I thought it was, and it was a real blow to lose him for the World Cup, because I think it diluted that slightly different game that Wales were trying to evolve under Gatland, and I thought that Anscombe was able to offer him that threat at 10, and Bigger was able to come on and close games out, and that for me was massive. So I think he absolutely can do it. You know, he'd be raging to have to sit on the bench as well, and he'd come on and be desperate to prove a point. So, you know, like letting a dog off the lead. So I'm on board with that.
He wouldn't be happy, would he? And yeah, on he'd come and more than likely have a blinder. And I think he'd be thinking, well, you know, if I was playing against Georgia, I could have shown what I could have done. But I think Sheedy's done enough. Also, with the way in which England play with that, there's quite a lot. There's a nice amount of space, isn't there, just behind the backs. and the way in which the back three is set up, you've got a, it's not a huge amount of space. But there is space there that I think Sheedy can just put a few dinks over, few grubbers through as well. He's got that in his locker. I'm not saying Bigger hasn't, but again, he knows those players probably, you know, slightly better. So I'd be looking forward to seeing him being a bit of a box of tricks in that middle area of the field. Johnny Williams, I thought, did enough. So I'd like to keep that combination there with 10 and 12. I think it would be wrong to break that down. So I'd keep that. And in terms of keeping things going, I'd go with Tompkins at 13 as well.
Would you?
I would against this side. I thought that he made a couple of errors. I mean, he was skinned at one point, wasn't he? Mm. Which was a little bit concerning. But I would keep him in there. I think that England look, if there is, and I hope this doesn't come back to bite me, but if there is an area where you can, or if there's two areas where you can capture them, it's one with that dink over or that little bit of space behind the backs because they rush up. And then in the outside channels, you have, you know, Ireland had made some yards, probably could have got a try or two if they'd executed a little better, but there's a bit of room there. And if Tompkins can get on the outside, then who knows, but also he might run up a blind alley as well, but we'll just have to go for it and see what happens there.
Yeah, so interesting. I mean, it's a big call to drop John Davis.
It is. It's a massive, massive call, but I just think
you're going
not
for form throughout your team, aren't you? And again, we've not seen much of him because obviously he's been injured post World Cup, and we've not seen the same John Davis since pulling on that 13 jersey this autumn. So
I just think we have to go on form, don't we? Yeah. We've kind of said it before that, you know, Wales hasn't picked on form before, it's picked on reputation. So partly I want to kind of stick to that and say, look, let's reward the players that are playing and the sort of seemingly fit, albeit, you know, Josh Navidi, we'll forget about that one. But let's go with Tompkins. I've then got, I thought Louis Rees-Sammet did well.
Mm.
Thought he played very well, took a couple of high balls quite nicely, had that blinding run, didn't he?
Yeah.
Beautiful run, couple of good offloads. So, and again, he knows a lot of those players. So I think he'd love playing against England. So he's done enough to keep the shirt. I don't think it's right to take it off him. I then have, now this is a tough one, but I'd go with Josh Adams.
Yeah.
And Halfpenny at 15.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting there. Cause if we talk about picking on form, I think Josh Adams has not been, he's not been himself these last three games, I would say. I think he's got enough credit in the bank that you're not relying off his performances from a year ago. I think that he was playing very well.
His club form is good, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. And I think he's got enough credit in the bank to suggest that he's got a good game in him coming around the corner. So I think that, I can completely understand that. I think you have to pick Halfpenny at 15. There are a few glimpses from Liam Williams yesterday, but again, I would argue we've not seen, he's not played a lot of rugby, has he? It's very hard to come back at the international stage and find your feet. And, you know, even quality players like John Davis and Liam Williams are finding that. So I think the fact that Halfpenny's been fit for so long and is playing well, you stick him at 15 and then you have
the
flyers outside him.
With their kicking game as well, we need the best positional 15 in world rugby on the park. And I think Halfpenny's been our standout player, to be honest, in all the games he's played in. Mm. Turnovers, he's been winning turnovers, as you pointed out a few times. I think he's been arguably our most attacking player as well. You know, maybe that's slightly bizarre to say that with Halfpenny, but I think he has. And defensively, just been an absolute rock. So
you have him on there to kick the goals as well, don't you?
You do, yeah, with Sheedy at 10. So, yeah, without a doubt, he's the 15 for me. And this does leave then a very, very exciting and strong bench.
Let's hear it.
Well, I haven't got it yet. I'm going to go with Webb.
What about your forwards to start with on the bench?
It's always going to be all over the shop, isn't it? But can we get yours as well as we go through it? So Webb at nine?
Yeah. So if I was picking a bench based on your starting 15, I'd have Webb at nine to come off the bench.
Yeah. I then have Bigger on the bench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Then have Liam Williams.
Yeah. I think you need to covers wing and fullback.
Yeah,
and
even though he's had this very nasty mouth injury, isn't he?
Yeah, he has. What do you do if there's an injury in the centre there though?
If there's an injury in the centre, I think that
you'd have to maybe look at centre.
Yeah, or Bigger.
So Bigger to 10, Sheedy to 12, maybe.
Yeah, or the other way around, maybe Bigger. Yeah, Bigger to 12. Keep Sheedy at 10.
Okay.
Risk probably wouldn't go. They probably wouldn't go with it, but I would in this game. Front row, then I'd go with Nicky.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd probably go with Leon Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he did well when he came on. And again, let's give him that little bit of reward for winning that scrum penalty. Hooker, I'd go with Sam Parry.
Yeah, I would too.
A couple of good throws when he came on. Looks powerful. Good round the park. And he's got a turnover in him as well, isn't he? So with Nicky and him coming on, we might have a couple of turnovers and Leon Brown will do something different in the loose. So, and then what have we got then? Second row, I'd go with Corey Hill.
Yeah, I would.
His technical ability then coming in off the bench. He tends to play well against England, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Real sort of dog, loves that type of game. And even though you think, right, he's not the most physical, he doesn't tend to take a backward step. Mm. He is physical, isn't he? He doesn't go back, even though he looks a little under... He doesn't look like an imposing second row.
No, he doesn't, but he does. He does a lot of.
He's so smart.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and such a leader as well. That I think that's a real presence coming in off the bench. A risk, I think we could quite easily start him, and I know you would. So, and then where else are we? Then we is that
you got back row cover now,
and then we got back row. Yeah, so back row cover. Yeah, that's. It's pretty tough. I thought both of them actually did very well. I thought he was everywhere, and he put his body on the line, didn't he? In this game though, I would bring in Ollie Griffiths, and I'd have him on the bench, and I think I'd be really excited about him coming on.
Yeah, with your team,
very excited.
With your team, I'd have him on the bench because obviously he covers 7 and 8. But I'd have him starting with 7 on his back personally. But anyway, there we go. Right, just before we wrap up, then Dan, let us have your prediction for next week.
Wales by 5.
Wales by 5. Seriously?
No. Yeah, I'm going Wales by 5.
Very, very bold call, my friend.
It's coming.
Interesting. I'm going England by 24.
Oh.
I think it's a hammering time next week, if I'm honest. I very much hope I'm wrong, but I think that they absolutely cantered past Ireland. Ireland gave us a shoo-in. I don't think we'll have had time to address the kind of the proper defensive frailties, the lack of organisation, the lack of a game plan. I'm not sure we're going to have these things corrected, and it's the worst possible game that you could face. So I can see an out and out drubbing next week, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you're probably right there. I mean, I think you could add my 5 to your 24 being 29, and maybe stick another 15 on top of that. But let's hope, let's pray. And, yeah, it's going to be an exciting. It's always an exciting week, isn't it? Building into Wales England. This time round, it's. I think we're all absolutely dreading it, But I am looking forward to, you know, the times we're in, I'm really looking forward to seeing a game of rugby
like,
again.
It's just like being the 90s and the noughties again, unfortunately. But anyway, there we go. We've said before, I'm not one of these who... Do you remember 2019? Like, all the media were just bigging England up as they came into Cardiff. Oh, this is the next step on the road to the Grand Slam. And I knew that week. I didn't know, but I felt very good that week that we had the ability to go out there and turn them over, and turn them over we did, because that was, you know, Gatland had those big games in him to get one.
Yeah, that mental edge as well, didn't he? Yeah. We were able to get into them, and on the psychology front, just really get into their minds. Yeah. But
he masterminded that, and everyone was, the whole press were basically trying to give England that title before they'd won it, and Wales did an absolute number on them that day. Now, this time round, England are much better than they were at that point in time. They've really kicked on, and they found some gems, particularly in the back row, I think, that have that just mean they've got strength all across the park. I think they're playing very, very well, and I just think we're so disjointed, and we're desperately trying to find our feet. So unfortunately, I think that's the stage we're at. But
we also had Edwards and Gatland, didn't we? Just pick in one or two points of weakness, probably one point of weakness with England, and each time we managed to do a job on them when they were expected to win, which, you know, and quite often at times we weren't playing the best rugby, were we? But we identified something. I think it was, you know, Edwards that would identify something, and we'd really go after that one point and turn it into a real strength against them. But you worry. Well, I can't see that happening this time round. So that's the worry, because they've been
predicted Wales by five, Dan.
Yeah, I know. I've got to back Wales, haven't I? But England have often been a lot more powerful than us, and they come in and you know, then at times we've managed to unpick them and make them look a little bit average.
But that game in 2019 was a prime example. Everyone was saying they were too powerful, and the Wales pick and go that entire second half, they just didn't adapt, and we did an absolute number on them in the end. But I just don't see where that moment of tactical genius is going to come from at the moment. So there we go. Anyway, we'd better wrap up there, Dan. I hope your prediction is closer to the mark than mine is. But thanks for joining us. And of course, a big thanks to everyone who listened and everyone who sent questions in. So that is hugely appreciated. And we'll be back here next week, regardless, whatever the result, to help you through it. And a final thanks, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some fantastic quality coffee, you can do that. And there's some brilliant offers on there too at the moment. So if you want to get your coffee supplies in before Christmas, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. We'll be back to chat rugby with you next week. Thanks for listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.